Is there anyone here who thinks they might be eligible to vote, didn't vote by mail, and wants to come get a ballot now? Save lines later. If everyone here has a ballot or has already voted by mail, then we'll begin in just a minute. I want to have first Jonathan Raines give us a few announcements, and then I'll start the NAR Town Hall meeting, and then we'll do the association meeting, which is the formal meeting, fairly brief at the end.
I'm going to make this really quick. First of all, I want to thank everyone for helping out the range today. I think things went very well. Everyone cooperated, worked together, and flying three events in there didn't seem all that difficult in one day. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Aurora Tour tomorrow. No cameras are allowed in the facility, so if you have cameras, don't take them in. And after the meeting, Greg Bach is standing in the back. People that are going to Aurora, just talk to Greg. We're trying to arrange, just put the arrangements together as far as carpooling and what time we're going to leave to get to Aurora.
Right. I got some of that stuff when you guys signed in and you put who you were driving with, but I just want to sort of filter it down because I think we can get it down to about a dozen cars, but maybe a little more. But it'll work out pretty well that way.
So again, thanks a lot, everyone, for helping out on the range today. I really do appreciate it.
First day one of an NARM, I thought it went really well. For any day of an NARM, I thought it went really well. Three events in one day. We didn't think we could do it. That was speaking in my Novar hat. I am not Mark Bunding. But I'm speaking for him tonight because I'm the vice president acting in the president's stead. Mark sent me a letter this afternoon that he asked me to read aloud here. I'll read an abridged version of it, and then I'll go over a few items that I think are of great interest to the NAR membership here at the town hall meeting. The concept is we have an informal town hall meeting, back and forth discussion. At the end of it, after we've had the general discussion of the state of the NAR and answered any of your questions about what's going on in the NAR, then we'll have a formal association meeting, number one business item of which is to do the election of the Board of Trustees. So please don't mark your ballot yet, because we have to entertain motions for nominations from the floor before we officially close the ballot and then proceed to vote. Normally the association meeting, as most of you know, is pretty short. And because of the advanced work that the Rockers and Jennifer have done, the vote counting part will not take very long tonight. So we'll conclude with the association meeting. So let me read what Buddy sent. Mark's life is not doing really well right now. His bank got bought out by a larger bank from New York, and they're merging, and this is the week. Last week and this week are the weeks of the actual physical merger where they merge offices, move, shift computers, combine databases, and so forth. The good news is that out of the merger, he still has a job, which most of the Bank One people didn't. But the bad news is he's not here. This is the first NARM in 22 years he's missed.
This is 40 hours in the last 3 days.
40 hours. Wow. Well, I've called him at 10 or so at night on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and found him at the office on each occasion. And he still wasn't leaving on any of those occasions. So it's been tough. He's still chasing the last nickels and dimes, well, millions, or whatever it is, the merging of the financial databases. So I'll read his letter. My fellow NAR members, apologies for not being able to visit with you personally, but the third largest banking merger in U.S. history required me to remain in Chicago. I know that Jonathan Raines and his crew have done an outstanding job planning for your flights and fun, and my thanks to them for their excellent work. I want to leave you three thoughts about the state of the NAR. When I think about our association's opportunities and challenges, it's these three things that are driving a lot of my thinking and my work. First, on regulatory matters, while it may not be obvious, progress is being made. The public perception of our battle is that we are being overly regulated by the government. Additional support and education is ongoing in the Congress, and more congressional doors are being opened to us. Do not mistake my silence on regulatory matters for inaction or lack of effort. As an example, it took 4 months of work with J.P. Stevens, Trip Barber, John Kite, and Candace Cotton for me to coordinate ATF legislative liaison Ross Aaron's visit to the Team America Rocketry Challenge in May. Many of the items I'm working on require lead times similar to this or are sufficiently politically sensitive that talking about them publicly in advance would ruin the effort. As frustrating as this is for NAR members, it's equally frustrating for me regarding the time it takes and the silence required, but it's ultimately necessary to be stealthy, persistent, and patient for us to achieve success. Secondly, education is a cornerstone in the NARA's future. I want to thank and applaud the efforts of J.P. Stevens and Trip Barber on Team America Rocketry Challenge, and I'm already looking forward to next year's. We clearly have tapped into a huge resource reservoir with this program. Aside from the obvious educational benefits, Team America has helped us continue to convince the public that our hobby is safe and not a threat to national security. Thank you for your excellent support of the highly motivated and qualified kids who participate in Team America. I know many of you have told me how much fun you've had watching them share our hobby. If you've not joined in the Team America support before, consider doing this for the 2005 event. Team America has opened other doors on our education efforts. Vince Hughley and his team in the NARA Education Committee are working on several projects for the fall school start. The NARA is making excellent progress on rocketry education, and it's important that we continue to expand this work. Third and finally, I want to commend our NAR section leaders for the work they put into our hobby and association. NAR section leaders are in the trenches when it comes to supporting and improving the NAR. The NAR board and I want to be sure we hear from you during the NARAM, particularly at the section leaders meeting if you're a section leader. I strongly urge section leaders to attend the meeting organized by Section Activities Chairman Rod Schaefer this week. Listen to Rod's report and then engage him and the NAR board in conversation. It's absolutely essential for NAR section leaders and members to continue in your work with launch organization, demo launches, Team America support, and school visits. And equally important that the NAR board and I provide the right tools to sections to assist you in these services. Again, my apologies for being a no-show. Fly safely and well, and in the immortal words of Howard Galloway, remember, model rocketry is fun. So that was the report from our president in absentia. I'm the acting president for this week, and I want to give you a few updates based on the Board of Trustees meeting that your volunteer Board of Trustees had all day on Friday, from morning until late evening. First is the state of the NAR. We have about 4,700 members right now, and that's relatively flat, a very, very slow decline, maybe 150 decline over the last year in connection with the dues increase. Of that 4,700, 600 are junior, about 300 are leader, and the rest are seniors. And of the 3,800 seniors, 1,800 of them are high power certified. That number has become flat after years of rapid growth. That's flattened off for obvious reasons. Our finances are pretty good. We're at about financial break-even. We're about a $350,000 a year operation. Most of the revenue is membership dues. Some of it is advertisements in the magazine and a few other odds and ends. We're running about break-even, but we're spending about $70,000 a year currently on the legal and legislative effort. We had a dues increase that raised about $50,000 a year of income. We're getting about $20,000 a year of donations thanks to your generosity, and that's what's financing the $70,000 a year legal battle. And sport rocketry has gone to black and white temporarily, at least inside, in the interest of financing that legal battle. And as soon as the legal battle's over, we certainly have the revenue within this organization to return to what sport rocketry was. Same number of pages, but color. So it's a temporary pause, but it's driven by the need to win this war that we're in. And make no mistake about it, it's a war. I'll talk more about it here at the end, because I think that'll probably prompt the most discussion. So let me review a couple of other topics, and then I'll get back at the end to the one that's probably on most people's mind. First, NAR headquarters is moving. Kevin Stump has a new job in a different state, and Marie and he are moving. Kevin's already there. They're selling their house, not sold yet. When it's sold, they'll move. So there'll be a new address, not a new 800 number, but potentially a new fax number and odds and ends for headquarters. They'll be down about 2 weeks, whenever that happens. And it'll be sometime in the next few months. So there'll be a temporary interruption there of a couple of weeks. But Marie will continue to run headquarters just from a new state, a new location. Let me talk a little bit about volunteers. This organization is a volunteer organization. We have only one person who gets compensated for their work in the NAR. That's Marie. She's a contract employee. Frankly, doesn't make near enough as she earns. And all the rest of us are volunteers. And all of the people who run the NAR down at the local level, as you know, are volunteers. That's what makes the NAR. A handful of committee chairmen, the board of trustees, the section leaders, and then all the people who do the work. But as a purely volunteer organization, we really depend on volunteers to step forward when they're needed and do the jobs that are needed. We have a good set of committee chairmen and trustees right now, almost all of whom, in fact, all of whom currently, are working at their jobs, trying to make your NAR better. So if you're a member of a section, if you're a member of a committee, please help the committee chairman so that it's not a one-person effort. If you're a member of a section, please help your section leaders so that it's not a one- or two-person effort. Because that's the heart of the NAR. Half of our members are in sections. The percentage of our members who are in sections has dramatically risen over the past 5 years. It's very clear that sections are the lifeblood of the NAR. Now, we've always said that, but in today's regulatory environment, when it takes insurance, site owner insurance, which you can only get if you're a section, to get a place to fly, and all the other overhead associated with operating a rocket range, it's pretty clear that sections are the NAR. And each section is driven by a couple of committed volunteers who are willing to put the interest of the entire group ahead of their personal flying activities and help run launches. So on behalf of all the leadership of the NAR, I want to thank those of you who are leaders at the section level. I want to thank the Board of Trustees, and I want to thank the committee chairman, because that is your NAR. That is why we get things done. And when we don't have good volunteers, we don't make progress. So in each of those committees where you've seen significant achievements over the past few years, it's been driven by a couple of volunteers, and we're always looking for more. One of the more committed volunteers, in fact, one of the most committed of all, has been Steve Loveliner, who's run Sports Services for the last 12 years. And Steve has finally grown a little bit weary of that, so we're going to give him a relief and let Carl Talenko do it. So there's going to be a transition of Sports Services Committee. Steve, if you'd stand up, and Carl, this is the changing of the guard. One of the big transitions that we're going through right now. We have a trustee election, and we never get exactly a whole lot of volunteers to be trustees. There's not a lot of suspense associated with most of the elections. There are three people running for three positions. And I'll say a lot more about the departing trustees at the awards banquet on Friday, but a couple of trustees are leaving the board. Mark Johnson and George Gassaway are departing, and they've served the NAR board for one of them 9 and the other 10 years, I believe. I counted it right.
Both
10 years? Okay. Well, that's a long time, and Board of Trustee membership involves travel, lodging, and other expenses, none of which is reimbursed. It's a huge commitment of time and effort to be a member of the Board of Trustees, and it's hard to get people to make that commitment, but these two gentlemen have made it and sustained it for 10 years and done a great job for the NAR, and I want to thank them for their services. And we have one of the two volunteers, two people volunteered to be on the board, Ted Cochran, who is here tonight and is running for election. I will not give a campaign speech on him, but he's highly qualified. I think all of us know who Ted is, but he's been a spark plug of energy up in his state. And Dr. Jay Apt, a former shuttle astronaut, is joining the board, and he'll be at our next meeting and all subsequent meetings. So we persuaded him to come out of board retirement. He was previously an NAR board member before he was selected to the astronaut corps. And then when he was selected to the astronaut corps, he had to resign that office. And now that he's retired from being an astronaut and has a little bit of time, he's back running for the board. So we're always looking for other people who are interested in being on the board or interested in being committee chairman, because that is the motor that drives this organization of ours. So let me talk for a couple of minutes about the achievements or the things that we considered at the board meeting on Friday. And I'll hold the legal and legislative at the end and spend a few minutes talking about that. But let's go through a couple of the other items. The first thing we always do at a Board of Trustees meeting is review member needs and concerns. If you have communicated to Mark Bundick or to any board member who then relays it to Mark, an issue of some concern or a suggestion for how to improve the NAR, Mark keeps a little tally sheet. And each 6 months, as the Board of Trustees convenes, the very first thing we do at a meeting is go over those inputs from members. You have to be a member to make one of these, by the way. Hint. We've got a few from non-members. They don't last very long. But if you're an NAR member, your voice is very important to us, and we spend the first minutes of our board meeting, sometimes the first several hours, going over your inputs. In And I won't go through all of them. And each of the people who submitted them will get a personal reply back as to what we decided, but every one of them got serious consideration. We did ask that standards and testing expand the concept of contest approval to any certified model rocket motor, regardless of whether it was NAR or EEE certification, as long as the motor is commercially available. That's probably of the various inputs that the board received. If any of you had personal inputs that you'd like to hear about directly, I'll go over them after the meeting with you. But that's the one that I think will be of considerable interest to the whole membership. We also considered program for allowing people a little younger than age 18 to be involved with high-power rocketry, because we know it happens. I mean, you were seeing it out on the field today, that there are people who achieve early in model rocketry and want to keep moving upward and do other things. And sometimes that's competition, and that's good, and sometimes it's high power. And that's frustrating for them because the NFPA code does not allow the certification of users for use of high-power motors until they're 18 years old. So we reviewed some suggestions on what to do about that, and we reviewed a program recently approved by the Canadian Association of Rocketry and decided that there's a way to allow young people below the age of 18, and we set the minimum at the age of 14, to participate in high-power rocketry without going afoul of the regulations, which are very specific about custody of the motor. It's not the rocket, it's the motor that has the custody requirements. So we decided to approve, subject to publication of details, and there are some details that Carl will have to handle as the new chair on the support services, but a program that will be called NAR Junior High Power Level 1 Participation. We can't use the word certification, but basically the junior member, age 14 through 17, will be allowed to build and prep and check and fly a high-power rocket as long as the motor that goes in it remains in the custody of a person who's a certified user over age 18. So the kid can't have the motor, but can build a rocket and can get I can't use the word certification. He will get an endorsement on his NAR license that says NAR Junior HPR Level 1 Participation, or words to that effect. And it will automatically convert to Level 1 certification without further action when he turns 18, or he or she. So no further testing or test flights will be required. So I think that will bring us into alignment with basically what we see going on. And I think that the age of 14, certainly I know a number of 14-year-old kids with whom I've become acquainted through Team America who are ready for this and eager to do it. So I think we'll provide a way for them to do it without running afoul of very specific regulations. Further issue later on, if these motors, high-power motors, require an LEUP, the threshold for that's 21 years old, so that's going to be hard, but hopefully we will win that battle and not have to deal with that issue. We asked the Sports Services Committee to initiate a set of rules or to propose and circulate a set of rules for competition for high power, not for points, but a structure of 4 or 5 events that you could choose to hold at a high power launch for local competition for bragging rights or whatever, but not adding points up or anything. Nevertheless, some format or some structure for competition in some consistent way across the U.S. And in addition to that, we've asked contest and records, the record subcommittee, Dan Winings, to maintain custody of altitude records at power levels above G, H, I, J, and so forth. So there will be an unlimited altitude record setting procedure to be established, published by Support Services for high power rockets. By the way, as I go through these, if anyone has specific questions, wave your hand and I'll recognize you. I only have another 3 or 4 to go. I'll pause for questions and then I'll start talking about legal and legislative, and I'll probably be here for a while answering your questions on that. The Education Committee has a number of initiatives that are underway and several others that they're considering. I won't talk about the ones being considered, but the ones that are underway are a newsletter for educators. We have about 275 teachers whose names we acquired through a variety of means, mostly Team America, is being interested in getting further information from the NAR about how to use rocketry in education in the classroom. And the Education Committee produces a newsletter for those teachers about 3 times a year. In addition to that, we're producing a version 2.0 of the Educator Resource CD-ROM. We produced about 1,000 of version 1.0 about 3 years ago and have given them all away to educators at various trade shows and through other means. This will be a much better formatted, better organized, and have more content version of the CD-ROM. So those are two resources that we can put up right away. And the core issue that we're dealing with after that is whether we should proceed down a path of trying to write serious curriculum for classes. We're not very good at that. I've never really gained much traction trying to do that. Or whether we should design an after-school enrichment program for rocketry as a teaching aid, which is essentially what Team America is, except that the lessons that you teach through Team America are not written down. The goals force teaching to happen, but the lessons by which the teaching occurs are not really written down. A lot of individuals have done them at the individual level, and so perhaps we can do something there. You know, over to the Education Committee to figure out what to do and which path to pursue. But there's a lot of enthusiasm amongst the members of the Education Committee, chaired by Vince Hughley, but with quite a few members. It's one of the larger committees that the NAR has. In fact, other than the contest board, which has regional chairman, I think education may well be our largest committee. There's a lot of enthusiasm here. So we're making some real progress in producing something that would be of value to educators to help use rocketry in the classroom. Standards and testing has tested and certified 16 motors so far this year and is beginning their triennial recertification. They're very active. The Central Massachusetts Space Modeling Society, whatever CMAS stands for, has run standards and testing with Jack Kane for many, many years, and they're still at it, hard and strong, doing a good job certifying motors. I'm going to talk for a few minutes about Team America. I know something about that. I think many of you do as well. Team America is not going to go away. We've had two. We thought it was going to be a one-time event. It was too good to not repeat, and it repeated better than the first one, and it was too good to not keep doing. And that's what aerospace industry wants. That's what the Aerospace Industries Association wants. It's what NASA wants. I hope it's what the NAR wants, because we're headed there. And for those of you that have been involved in it, I've not heard complaints from any of the people who've actually worked with the kids that this wasn't fun. In some cases, it's hard work, but it's very rewarding. It's definitely the essence of paying forward to the next generation, passing on the enthusiasm that we feel that we acquired when we were younger in most cases. But it's a clear way to pass on to the next generation both our enthusiasm for rocketry and an interest in aerospace as a career field, which is why the Aerospace Industries Association is sponsoring it. So there will be a TARC 2005, and I'm sure 6 and 7. 2003 was funded entirely by the resources of the AIA, the association itself. 2004 was funded by some of that and donations, cash donations from 21 aerospace companies. 34 companies have signed up to provide equivalent cash donations for TARC 2005. As we've gone through, a number of additional government agencies have been added. NASA's support of it has become stronger. At TARC 2004, there was a significant Air Force presence. The CIA was there recruiting. I still haven't figured that one out. But it made for some great photo opportunities, guys like this in front of the CIA banner. There are a handful of colleges there recruiting bright young students to be part of their freshman class in aerospace engineering. So there was a lot more participation at the professional aerospace level, because of the good words that got out after TARC 2003. And even better ones got out after 2004. My partner in running this, J.P. Stevens from AIA, is a publicity genius. The weekend after the Team America 2004 is the annual meeting of the chief executive officers of aerospace companies. And J.P. is sort of the executive secretary of that meeting through his association. So he put on a slideshow of TARC 2004, complete with the kids who won the individual odd prizes for best uniform and best spirit and so forth, each of which had an aerospace company's name on it. And the aerospace company executives were bragging to each other about their team that won their award and shaming the companies that didn't have awards, that i.e. weren't financial contributors of TARC 2004. So that's what got us another 13 aerospace companies signed up. JP is good. I mean, he wants the whole world. He wants it to go global. If he could get kindergartners in it, he probably would. I've told him that the NAR would probably saturate at about 1,250 teams. We had 609 this year. I think we can do more. But we can't do 5,000 or 10,000. We're going to get flooded. So I told him to plan on no more than 1,250. The events have changed. The event has changed for 2005. 2003 and 4 are very close, slight difference in altitude. 2005 is going to be a precision duration event. And you'll be allowed to fly single stage, single egg lofters. There'll be a penalty of about 3 seconds of duration for having one egg versus two. And another penalty of 3 seconds if you have one stage instead of two. But you can get a qualified flight, and if your duration is very close to the target, you could conceivably qualify to come to the final fly-offs with a single stage, single egg lofter. Probably aren't going to win the fly-offs that way, but you could at least get there. We found that a lot of teams were discouraged because they couldn't even achieve a so-called qualification locally. So we're trying to make the bar to qualification somewhat easier without making the bar for actually winning any easier. So I think this is a compromise between the two. The other thing that we did was, well, first AIA got rid of their lawyer that had all of the restrictions about you can't from the last 2 years and found one who starts sentences with you can't. So we're expanding the eligibility for Team America, not to a lower grade level, it's 7th through 12th, but to nonprofit organizations like Boy Scouts, 4-H, Federation of Galaxy Explorers, Young Astronauts, and others, because we found that there were groups of kids that were not all going to the same school but knew each other and had something in common, generally a nonprofit, that wanted to be part of it, but it was too hard on the school structure. Now, schools are still going to predominate, and we got rid of all the words about accredited and so forth, and if you read the words carefully, it doesn't say anything about homeschool. That is, a homeschool is a school. And so we're trying to get rid of all the things that say you can't enter and make it much easier to enter. We took the limit off of how many teams per school. We found that some schools had 20 teams that were competing, but since they could only enter three, they'd have a local elimination and only send in three. You don't have to do that. You can enter as many teams as you like from each school. So I think participation, because of those changes, is going to be somewhat stronger. If you think about it, it's a two-stage, two-egg, precision duration egg loft. And that sounds easier than precision altitude, but think about it for a minute. How exactly are you going to get the egg to stay up exactly X seconds? I'm not going to announce what X is until September 7th. But it's, you know, it's a minute and a half, that kind of range. Basically, I timed a bunch of the Team America models that didn't drift very far and picked a time that was in the middle of all that. So you're basically going to be able to use a model that went that was used last year that went 1,250 feet and came down at a respectable speed and didn't break eggs. And that model's duration is going to be right in the heart of the envelope for the new target. But how are you going to get it down exactly? I'm sure we prohibit radio control or any off-board control, but we do not prohibit autonomous control. So whatever combination of dethermalizer, timer, GPS, whatever. And I found in the first year we did TARP, I thought I knew how to do precision altitude dual egg loft, and there wasn't a single design out there that I would have thought of, but a lot of them worked better than any I would have thought of. So I'm sure the same will be the case for controlling flight time. There will be ways to do this that I've never imagined, and I'm looking forward to that. It's a different challenge, and I don't frankly think it's any easier. But it is different. We have to change this from time to time. The altimeters were killing us. Perfect flight altimeters do work well, but it's just expensive. You lose them in trees and they crash and so forth, and there are teams buying 3 or 4 or 5 of them.
Wow.
So this will be a lot cheaper. But the heart of Team America, the value added of the National Association of Rocketry to Team America, is our volunteers. The 70 or so who run the fly-offs, sure, but it's really the hundreds and hundreds around the United States at the section level that make it or break it. If these kids can't find somebody to be their mentor who tells them which way is up on a rocket and how to put fins on and where to get fins and where to get the stuff, if they don't have that, they stagger around and they waste a lot of time and they get frustrated and there's a high dropout rate. If they do have that and they pass that critical threshold of, oh, I understand now, then it's wonderful. They're self-sustaining from that point on until it's time to launch. And then they need a launch field. And in some localities, that's not hard. In others, it's very challenging, and only NAR sections or Tripoli prefectures really have access to that. So Team America lives and dies by the local volunteers. I recognize everybody in the room, and I think most of you are signed up, but if any of you would like to sign up to be a mentor, and the degree of involvement that being a mentor represents can range from you're visiting the school once a week and holding class to you're there when they come out to the launch field and talk to them once or twice before then or anywhere in between. So the level of involvement is up to you, and you can control it. But the teams need it. And it's really rewarding when you get involved with the team and see how much fun they're having and how exciting it is for them. And these are kids who've almost all the kids have not done rocketry before. There are about a third of this year's teams were re-entries from last year. But other than that, these are not kids who've flown lots of rockets. There are not very many NAR members amongst them. So they're learning from the very basics. And, of course, they want to skip the Alpha 3 step and go directly to designing and building their two-stage, you know, precision altitude dual Eagle Lofter as their first rocket in their whole lives. And one of the jobs of the mentor is to talk them out of that and make them fly at least one or two other rockets. But they need your help. So if you would like to add your name to the role of mentors, please see me. And if a team contacts you in your section and would like a place to fly, please take the time to reach out to them. And I don't mean schedule extra launches, although some sections have done that. But welcome them to your launches. If you can waive the launch fee, do that. Some clubs can. Others have different policies. But to the extent you can, please consider doing that as well. So I'm still excited about Team America. I'm still going to do it. Novar seems to still be behind it here as the local host. We're getting a little tired this year, having held two major national events, but one a year is okay, particularly one as good as TARP. So we're trying to exploit Team America for all that it's worth, and it's worth a lot to the NAR for public recognition, for linkages to aerospace industries. As Bunny mentioned in his letter, the executive assistant to the director of ATF came to Team America this year. At our invitation, it took us 4 months to talk through back channels very quietly, extend the invitation to the director, through the senator, through... And all this stuff blows up if people know you're doing it, because politicians get embarrassed that somebody's committing on their behalf, and then they deny that they ever said anything. It's a strange world. I've lived in Washington for many years, and you just have to be very covert about what you do sometimes, or people get their backs up and won't participate, won't cooperate. But the guy came out. Turns out he's a reasonable human being. Now, I don't know what he's going to do for us, but he spent 3 or 4 hours out there on the high power range, and NOVAR member and NAR high power flyer Bill Schwarr and a number of volunteers put on a wonderful high power rocketry demonstration for the crowd of kids who loved it, and for Senator Enzi, who pushed the firing button on a couple and loved it, spent the whole day out there with his grandchildren, and for Ross Ahrens, who, you know, the senator had his arm around Ross Ahrens saying, "My son, watch." But the Senator Enzi is as good as gold. He has absolutely nothing to gain from this. He's just doing it because he's a good guy and believes in us and what we're doing. So he's a true hero, and he is the winner of this year's Galloway Award, no doubt about it. He's in Wyoming for the month of August at Senate recess, so he can't be at our banquet, but we will find an opportunity to present that well-deserved award to him. But anyway, I think we made a significant impression on Ross Ahrens, and we may see some feedback, some payback from that. And that kind of brings me into the legal and regulatory. So I'm going to stop there for just a minute and see what questions you have about what I've said up to this point, and then shift gears to the more depressing topic of legal and legislative. Bob?
Since you're just talking about TARP, are there any thoughts of moving the fly-offs anyplace other than here?
No. Next. I mean, AIA basically said no. 50 people from AIA come out and help us run it. And AIA pays them for their time and would have to pay them for their travel. It's just completely impossible. They handle all the professional media. They put out $25,000 of catering for food. It will not work anywhere except here. I was interested in rotating it to there are about two, maybe three places else in America where there's a section strong enough to do it, but AIA said, no, not happening. What other questions? About everything except legal and regulatory. I'll put my game face on and we'll shift gears here in just a minute. Yep, Chris?
Actually, I got two questions. This one has pretty much already been answered, but I wanted them to know I asked. Philip Stein wanted to ask about the teenage certification type thing, but we've already gone through that. And this is a vague question, but I'll present it. Probably going to be a general answer. And Al Glower would like to know... if there's any plans for long-term strategy to encourage growth in sport rocketry. He says, I realize we have to continue to fight under regulation action. However, there does not seem to be any focused direction to restore public interest. So are there any defined...
Sport rocketry being specifically high power? Or
no. Public interest in rocketry in general. Nothing to do with regulatory stuff, but just getting more members.
Well, If you look at the statistics of where the NAR is getting more members, the website, of course, is number one, but sections are number two. And I know that many sections have outreach programs, which we recognize it's fairly heavily weighted on the section of the year point count, because that kind of outreach from NAR sections is particularly effective. NOVAR is very busy in that area, too. And I think the structured program that the NAR has is down at the section level, encouraging sections to conduct public demonstrations. For example, NOVAR puts on a high-power rocketry demonstration here at Great Meadow in front of about 20,000 people every 4th of July. They don't come just for that, but it's part of an overall 4th of July show. But I was talking to the executive director of Great Meadow today, and she says our act is the most well-received at the whole show. People talk about it afterwards. They look forward to it. It's about 15 minutes of smoke and thunder, I's and J's. So that's the kind of stuff sections have to do. The NAR doesn't have the money to run a public relations campaign, but we have the heart, the people, to do it at the local level. NARHAMS is brilliant at it. NOVAR works at it some. We're a little absorbed with Team America, but a lot of sections are out there doing it. I think that's the mechanism. But we got to get this legal cloud out from over our heads before we can really take the next step. Mass marketing of model rocketry used to be a lot more fun when Estes had a heart. They don't have too much of one currently, although they do continue to sponsor trophies at NARAM to their credit. They did that again this year. They've never stopped that. But the other outreach activities that used to be driven a lot by Estes have subsided. They had the resources to do it nationwide at a level that the NAR can't do. But we do what we can do, and the sections are the key to that.
Just on that same topic, I have had some conversations with Bunny about some ways to get some other cheap ways to get rocketry back in front of the public in a positive light. That's kind of a second tier of projects that he's assigned to me, and I'd hope to be able to discuss them further with him this week, but obviously that's not the case. But we have discussed it, and we have some very tangible plans.
Kevin is the new head of our Public Affairs Committee, as in a few months, I think. Not years and years, but he did an incredible job at NARCON.
He slipped the job under my door at NARCON.
When we say volunteer, we take the term loosely. We'll take draftees, too, as long as they'll work. And Kevin has worked really hard. We've been very dormant in public affairs over the past 10 years. We've just had a hard time catching a spark. And Kevin's brought us a spark there, so we'll see what we can get out of it. We've wasted money on a number of efforts, including a video that never happened. So we're still trying to find our niche. That Wall Street Journal article, by the way, was particularly effective. We put Bunny and I and a number of other people put months and months into the background of that article. I think that did a lot of good for the hobby. And Save Rocketry Now, the video that Frank Hirota did, gave us a good image publicly as well. We're going to recognize him for that service. And so there are things going on, but we're so preoccupied right now at the leadership level with this legislative fight that we're missing opportunities. I mean, it's not just that sport rocketry isn't color. It's that most of the intellectual energy of the leaders of your association is devoted to fighting with the ATF. And, that's time and energy that we don't spend on trying to make the hobby more popular and better. I wish we could, but there's only a few of us. Yep, Bob?
Question that was asked to bring up by one of our section members, which maybe should be addressed to the person behind me. Is there something we can do for people whose high power certification has lapsed, and any of our membership has lapsed, and return after, I guess there's that 1 year window, so that they can directly certify back to the level that they were at?
We talked about that for a while at the board meeting, and we didn't quite come to a conclusion because we don't know all the consequences of if we did that, then what would that do to membership? We're not quite sure. So we didn't want to rush into it. We spent probably an hour talking about it, though.
Okay.
And we're still thinking about it. We didn't say no. We need to look at the second order effects. If we say yes, we want to make sure we didn't just shoot ourselves in the foot by 1,000 members or something. We're not quite sure. So we're still working on that one. Yes?
We're a young club, Cork, and we've recently, since we've started, done literally hundreds of like kids build flies, this kind of thing, every year with scouts. And we are very surprised that what we're finding is, you know, they come out to our launches as a group, and they fly, and they have a great time, and yet we don't see at, you know, subsequent launches a lot of these kids coming back.
Yeah, we have the same experience in those.
We've seen the kids will come back as a group the next year. We've got several Cub Scout groups, for example, that are on their third year with us.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not seeing a real participatory kind of a response. I don't know, is there a way to a different angle on that? I mean, we try to make kids as costly.
Well, think about it for just a minute. For scouts, rocketry is a merit badge. They have to have lots of merit badges. They move on quickly. 4-H has a more structured long-term program, CAP. I mean, so there are organizations that have rocket programs that you can grow in, and then there are others where it's check the block and move on, which is scouts. So typically you get more staying power out of the ones that have a long-term program, Young Astronauts, Galaxy Explorers, 4-H, and CAP. Scouts, you know, my own section's experience with scouts is that we're paying for it. We're just hoping that when they grow up, they'll remember rockets favorably and come back, but they're not going to stick with it by and large. Team America's, there's been a little bit more sticking to it with Team America. You wouldn't think that, but at high school, we've seen a number of rocket clubs started, and we're starting to see kids come back from college to fly high-power rockets that came into rocketry through Team America at high school age. So this is really different for the NAR. NAR membership is a bimodal distribution with peaks at 14 years and 47 years. The peak at 14 years is very extreme, very sharp, drops to near zero at driver's license age, and stays low until the 30s, and then climbs up slowly and peaks at the age of those of us that came into the hobby during the height of the space age. That peak, that bimodal distribution with the right-hand senior peak being very steep, very tall compared to the junior one, worries us a lot. So what we're doing is pumping energy into the one on the left, the young one, hoping that in 10 or 15 years they come onto the right-hand side before we all die of old age and NAR evaporates, which is a rough description of where AMA is. Let me get Steve Loveliner first.
One thing to keep in mind when you're doing demonstrations or you're doing participating with the younger group like scouts or whatever, the ones you have to sell are the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are easy to sell, but the kids don't have transportation, and at least in theory they don't have money. They're getting that from the parents. So you really got to sell the parents on the importance of the hobby. Let the kid help sell it too. He's really interested in wanting to do it. But go after the parents. The kid's easy.
Yeah. Every now and then you run across a gem, like, you know, a kid like Colin Harris, the little 14-year-old who I think knows more about rocketry than I do. Knows every thrust time curve, every motor, every certified. He was out there today. You don't have too many of those, but they're fun to have around. Let's see. Any other questions before I change gears? Yeah, Bob.
Is that peak moving 1 year per year?
Yes. Yeah, the old age peak is marching to the right almost a year every year. It's really worrisome. It's us. Growing older. And we need to pump more people in the 30-something category. So, you know, that's another area of outreach that we need to find young adults who have young kids who are going to start getting personally interested and grow up with the organization. Because otherwise, we have a pretty depressing future. Yeah.
If I can make a comment, having worked specifically with teachers in a number of schools in the Mid-Hudson Valley of New York, I see that you reach a kid, you reach the family, and there's an interest, and it dies. You reach a teacher, they see the effectiveness in the classroom, and that will continue. And you're reaching on an average of 30 kids each year that way. And that's the reason I agree with the NAR's program to stress the educators.
Right.
Keep going. Don't let it die.
Yep. And every now and then you strike a spark there, too. I mean, we have a NOVAR member, a guy named Chip Randall, who's an instructor, a teacher at Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, Magnet School. He organized a rocket contest for the entire freshman class of 700-something kids there for egg loft. And they flew it on the grounds of the school. It's tracking.
Wow.
Yeah, right. So you reach the right teacher and the leverage is immense, which is why the NAR keeps trying to get it going in education. Okay, let me talk about the legal... Oh, George.
To address your comment about having the bunch come to the launch and not see them again, you'll see them again some future years later. So don't be too disappointed. You are investing in the future by doing that.
Yeah, we continue to cheerfully do it in Novar, the scouts and so forth, with the belief that when they grow up, they'll remember rockets and say when their kids are looking for something to do, they'll come back. But it's a long-term investment, whereas if you invest in other groups, you get a quicker return in terms of actual membership, if that's important. Just to remind everybody, by the way, the NARP due structure is the juniors and leaders don't actually pay for as much. Their dues are not as high as the cost of providing the membership card, 6 issues of Sport Rocketry, and 6 model Rocketeers. We actually lose a dollar or two on juniors and leaders. But we keep the dues that low in the interest of not making a barrier for their entry. It's the adults' dues that run the organization. Okay, let me talk about legal and regulatory for a couple minutes. How many things are going on? There's a notice of proposed rulemaking, number 968, that came out last year. We buried the ATF on that one. We covered them with substantive comments. They're still trying to figure out what to do. They can't disregard them. They don't necessarily have to change their plans in accordance with our comments, but they can't just disregard them, and they had far too many of them. They weren't form letters, and many of them were very technically thorough. It's really hard for them to figure out what to do next. That's good.
Good.
Yeah, perfect. Good job. That was the NAR membership out there doing that. So that's, I mean, we're in a holding action on that one. There's nothing going on there right now. They're just sitting back trying to digest it. I don't know what they're going to do. There's the court case. We got a favorable judgment from the court on at least one count that an assembled high-power rocket motor is a propellant-actuated device, therefore it doesn't take an LEUP in a magazine due to an administrative oversight or an error that the ATF had made that we caught them on. It makes us feel good for a little while. They're going to crush us on that one. They're going to fix it with the notice of proposed rulemaking. Now, we can hit them with comments on it, but ultimately they're going to figure out how to close that loophole. So then you get down to a two-front war. One is regulations and enforcement. NPRM 968 was an attempt to fight us on that regulatory front, to impose administrative regulations on the hobby at a ridiculously low level of threshold, 62.5 grams of propellant as assembled. The other venue is legislative. Now, ATF thinks they don't need any legislation. They've got what they need with the Safe Explosives Act and the explosives list. But we've been after them on the legislative front with Senator Enzi's support and support from a couple of members of the House, not quite as active as Senator Enzi, but still favorably inclined to us. So we've introduced legislation in the Senate. Didn't go anywhere. Senators Schumer and Lautenberg put a hold on it, which means that under the protocol of the Senate, it will go no further until they personally lift the hold, which they won't do. But because we've opened the debate in the Congress, and now we're proceeding to the House of Representatives to try to introduce legislation there. Now, this is an election year, and they're rushing to adjourn and go get reelected. It's not going to happen this year. But the threat of legislation and the success we've had in getting the interest of Congress or some members of Congress for that legislation due largely to our paid political lobbyist, who's very, very good, John Kite. Both our lobbyists and our lawyers are about the best that there are in Washington, and they're charging us a small fraction. They are rocketeers themselves. John Kite's a level 2 certified, maybe level 3, but he's an active rocketeer. And the lawyers also are. So they're charging us pennies on the dollar, but it's not cheap. I mean, think of what their fees are for real companies. They draw a top dollar for their services, and they're very good. So John has managed to get a lot more attention for our cause in Congress than a cause of this nature normally would get. That's why we continue to send money to him. The threat of having legislation and the threat of interest of members of Congress focuses the attention of a federal bureaucrat. You may not get your law passed, but the threat of it and the letters and the calls and the harassment you can induce from receptive members of Congress make their lives miserable. They want it to go away. They'd like it to have it go away by crushing us, but they're not going to be able to do that. So what's their other mechanism of making it go away?
Compromise,
settle. And that's about what the court said as well. Figure this out. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make a deal with them. And the question is, can this particularly arrogant federal agency, and they're known throughout Washington as being one of the more arrogant enforcement agencies. Can they possibly bend and make a deal? Well, we know who is the energy behind the situation that we're in. We know the names of the bureaucrats within ATF and where they are in the hierarchy that caused this to happen. And we've gone around them by going to Ross Ahrens, who works for the new director of ATF, to try to open a different path of communication, because the other one was a solid roadblock due to those particular individuals stopping everything. So we're pursuing that. We're pounding on them with Senator Enzi and with several congressmen. What we're trying to do is to force a deal. We are not going to win this thing 100-0. We're not going to get everything we want. What they have tried to impose on us is completely unacceptable, and we will never accept it. But we're not going to get 100% of what we want. That's not the way Washington works, and this agency has too much power, and the national security environment is such that we're not going to be able to fly O motors without regulation. You're not going to be able to possess them and fly them without an LEUP. The question is, where's the threshold? G motors is ridiculous. O motors isn't going to happen. Somewhere in between, and depending on how we negotiate it and how much they're willing to compromise and so forth, and how much pressure we can bring to bear, we'll come to some kind of deal, we hope. Because this battle, ultimately, is bleeding the association of our energy and money. Now, with the due structure we have right now and the membership and so forth, we can sustain this for quite a while. We're partners with Triplium paying for this. They pay 50%, we pay 50%. We can keep going for a while, but this really isn't the best use of our time and money. We're going to do it because we can't lose this. If we lose on this issue and every high-power rocket from H on up, you must have an LEUP to possess the motor and so forth, we're going to lose a lot of the adults who are the energy in the NAR behind the sections and so forth. So it's not that we aren't going to be able to fly high power, it's we're going to lose a lot of people whom high power retains in the hobby. That's not necessarily this crowd, your competitors, and that's also a retention tool, but there's 4 or 5 times more high power flyers than competitors. So we need high power rocketry in the NAR. Triple needs it as well. So we're not going to surrender. We're not going to compromise for, you know, H motors or something, but I don't know where we're going to be able to set the point at which we compromise with ATF. We're going to have to get into some negotiations. The fact that negotiations are going on will have to be not told. We just can't tell anybody, because if word gets out that there is a negotiation, then ATF will walk away. So I wish I could tell you more about how we're going to work this out, but I think I don't know what the probability of success is. I know that we'll have the engagements. We will have those discussions with ATF. And we will work out with Tripoli a jointly agreed position. This is where we're going in at. This is the red line. And if they won't meet that red line, we're walking. We will agree that with Tripoli. And we'll see what happens. And it won't be long. But we don't know if they're going to deal at all. So we just have to see. We're not completely sure that we're going to be able to have such a meeting, but we're optimistic that with the pressure that we've brought to bear with our resources and your letters, they have realized that we actually know what we're doing, and we have political connections enough that they can't ignore us, and we're not going to go away. But don't be expecting to fly without an LEUP, you know, at every power level in a regulatory free environment. We're not going to go back to those days. That's just not the way life is in America. And when you fight a federal agency, nobody ever wins by a shutout. So we're gonna end up with some deal, I think. We'll see. Okay. That was the high-level view of what's going on. What are your specific questions about that part? Regulations. Chris?
What's the probability of an L2 compromise, say, J Motors? Your guess, your best estimate. Because if you're going L3, you're probably into stuff that needs layup anyway.
Yeah, we're not going to get level 3. ATF did tests. You probably heard about this on the internet. They wrote this views letter to Congress when we were battling to try to get the ENSI legislation introduced that asserted that these high-power rockets were such dangerous things that they could hit moving vehicles and flying airliners. And then they had to go off and do tests because we said that's not true. Prove it. And they went off to do these top secret tests. They couldn't hit anything. Well, they could hit the ground. They figured out that these things could hit the ground. So,
they hit a non-moving van.
Well, like they can hit somewhere, you know, within a quarter mile. I don't know what the distance is, but they did dispersion. They did it with G motors and they did it with J motors. And you know, you can throw bigger things further with J motors. So they sort of have in their mind that J motors are something they don't want to see us get. We have in our mind that that's not right. So that's about the point where we're, that's the friction point. I mean, I think everybody agrees that level 3 without regulation is going to happen. And we're not going to settle for something real small. But you know, you're somewhere in the ballpark of where we're probably going to try to compromise, but I don't know if they're going to do it because they did these tests, and it's clear from the way they set the tests up that they think a 0.9 pound, a J350 is what they tested. And what they were trying to prove is that was dangerous. So that's going to be hard. But that's, I personally wouldn't settle for anything less than that.
Curiously, though, how do they feel that regulating a J motor, just for example, is going to, I mean, just kind of, what's their justification? How is that going to keep people who want to break the law going out and buying 4 I motors and doing whatever they want to anyway?
Well, that's why they want to regulate it all. Because they think, oh, yeah, well, you can go buy 4 I motors and make anything you want. So, I mean, we basically know everybody in the hobby. If somebody's going out buying large quantities of this stuff, it gets noticed and known. If they don't have user certifications, if they've got a user certification, we know who they are. So we think we're self-regulating, but certainly the federal government and the people who worry about terrorist threats, they're not into self-regulating. They're into tight control with exact knowledge and fingerprints. So how have terrorists killed people? Suicide bombs, truck bombs, airliner bombs, they have to use rockets.
Fertilizer and
ammonium nitrate fuel oil. I mean,
Ryder truck.
Rockets. This is like the hardest way you could think of to do that. Why would you fire something at a target with a rocket when you could just fill a Ryder truck full of explosives and drive up to it? So, but somebody in ATF, and we know who, has decided this is the boogeyman. They're going to save America. And so that's where we are.
Why can't you tell us who that is?
Why would you even know? I'm not going to tell you the name of the mid-level bureaucrat who did this.
Just get him alive.
These guys carry guns. ATF is a phony police force, but they're enough of one that they carry guns. You really don't want to have a personal level battle with these guys. We're arguing at the executive level in the courts, not making it personal. There's nothing to be gained by personalizing this, let me tell you. There is nothing that will ensure a compromise doesn't happen. Like personalizing a battle with the federal bureaucrat. I am one, by the way. So,
has the ATF responded to Senator Enzi's letter yet?
You mean the one requesting test data?
Yes. What was it, October?
They've given him some briefings on what they did, but I don't think they gave him the most detailed briefing. They didn't respond in writing. But we're roughly aware of what they did. I mean, they basically showed that rockets can land after you practice enough. You can maybe hit a football field from I don't know what distance. But you can't hit a point target, but you can land in an area from some distance with some amount of weight. I don't know the distances and weight, but that's what they ended up doing, firing lots of rockets to try to hit an area target. Which
I could do that with a trebuchet.
Yeah, right. You could do it with a pumpkin chucker.
Did anyone point out to them that practice flights for spot landing is not allowed?
Yeah, we are self-regulating through the pink book, aren't we? That's why we need contest rules for high power. That's the rules we need. That'll make it safe. Let me go back there.
Do you know what their views are for the experimental rocketry? Because we have a lot of members on the other side, the dark side,
right,
of rocketry.
I think people who think that you can mix your own propellant and be free of regulation are deluded. They haven't cracked down on it yet, but they're going to go there. So that's another one of the things. I mean, the propellant-actuated device thing makes us feel good for a little while, but that's not a long-term solution. EX, I think when ATF focuses on it, they'll say, we met as assembled. If you're fabricating something with more than 62.5 grams, you better have a license, even though you can get the individual component parts separately without one. So they haven't focused on it yet because we're keeping them busy. But I wouldn't say that over the long term they're going to not go there. If they win what they're fighting us right now on, they'll go there next. I mean, we cannot surrender to these guys, because if they win, like this is only the first step, and then they're going to go after every other detail of our hobby. If you want to hear a scary story, talk to Jonathan Raines about his personal reinspection for his LEUP. You know, the agent's going into his backyard, and he wasn't in there looking in the kitchen window. 2.5 hours of interview. You know, we've got to get out of this. At least if you want to fly H motors. I mean, at some level, if you're flying Sidewinder motors, maybe. But it's ridiculous. We know what the energy level is of these things. I did a study, engineering study of the weapons potential of these rockets, and research in the literature, professional literature, on the degree to which they are likely to be usable as explosives. And there are military missiles that have 5 pounds of propellant, but there really aren't any effective weapon systems with less than that. And there's certainly none down at the 1 pound level that can hit anything. So, I mean, the energy that we're dealing with at the J and maybe K level, absent the guidance, I mean, figure out how would you make a guidance system that could actually repeatedly hit something? That's the heart of the matter. Motor's easy. Make that in your basement. Well, if you're EX. I mean, you can make the motor in a day. You can't make the guidance system in a year. So to hit anything, you need the guidance system. So these are not weapons. They don't have enough energy, and they don't have guidance. They're not usable as weapons. And we know that. And it's not like we know these things are really dangerous. We're just trying to be unlicensed. These things are not dangerous, at least not dangerous as intentional weapons. Kevin?
We've actually found quite a bit of support in our home state on a state legislative level. How effective do you think that is likely to be, pursuing that avenue, essentially, instead of, you know, attacking from the top, also kind of coming in from underneath to try and at least garner some support and some additional buzz in the halls of power? And is that something we should be, you know, just as careful about as we are with the letter writing campaigns and such?
Federal law always trumps state law. Mm-hmm. So if you have a state law that says you don't need a permit, but the federal law says you do, you need the federal permit, and nothing the state can do will prevent that. I think what may happen, and there are states where this is true, is that the state law can be worse than the federal law, and in that case, you really ought to fight that one. But you're never going to get looser than federal law. But the propensity at the state and local level is to be tighter than federal law, and by all means, fight that off. You ask about the letter writing campaign. It's very important at this point in the process that we not have random energy put onto the network, that we not have people, you know, go off and start writing letters indiscriminately. There will be times when we need lots of letters, and there was one for 968, and it worked perfectly, and it was just the right thing at the right time, and it made a difference. Other letters off cycle, when we're not trying to orchestrate a campaign, are probably not going to have a lot of impact, and they're going to potentially have an adverse impact of getting somebody that was about to agree to something all excited. So just lay low for a little while. We're working on this the best way we know how, with the best help we can buy. And there isn't anything more important to any of the leaders of NAR and Tripoli, and we are completely together in terms of partnership. So, you know, trust us, and just that's the way Washington is. And at some point, if we end up not doing well in these negotiations, we're going to take the gloves off and just go nuts with letter writing. But for a few months, we have some hope that we might be able to negotiate something. So while we're in that ticklish stage, it's best if people just lay low. But tell us, by the way, the court decision, the judge wants to hear from us in December if we find that ATF is being, arrogant. They're always arrogant. If they're being arbitrary, capricious, and uneven in their enforcement or interpretation of regulations on the local level as you're dealing with ATF agents, if you're experiencing capricious behavior where they're apparently making it up as they go along, you need to write a letter or an email to Bunny documenting that fact, particulars including the date and the agent's name, so that we can use it with the court in December so that he can spank ATF and, you know, give them some kind of sanction that would make our cause better.
That means
so
don't,
if you see capricious behavior going on by ATF agents, don't ignore that. But the way to respond to it, you're not going to get much relief through the ATF, but you will get relief through the courts. but we have to know about it. Mark has to know about it, so our legal team has that fact for the December court hearing. Steve?
Does John have any thought, we have an election coming up, about how the potential outcomes could be favorable or unfavorable to us?
You know who's going to win? No.
I don't know.
I don't know. The energy for what we're engaged in comes from career civil servants inside ATF as opposed to the political. The only political appointee at ATF is the director. So I think this is a battle being fought with bureaucrats that I don't know that this is going to trickle down from presidential politics down to the local level into the ATF. So I don't think the election outcome is going to materially affect the outcome of this thing. Well, unless Schumer and Lautenberg get unelected.
on the election, one thing you've got to think about is John Kerry comes from my state, and I would love to get rid of him.
Send him somewhere else.
But you've got to realize that Massachusetts politicians believe they have to take care of you. You are, do not know what you're doing. You can't smoke to stop the smoke that's put your health. You cannot use fireworks because you might singe your fingers. You cannot do everything. In fact, the laws don't really tell you what you can.
Okay. Next topic. Yep.
The International Society of Explosive Engineers requested a public hearing on NPR tomorrow, NPR MI-68.
Right.
And is the board aware of that? And they give days to allow a public hearing where they attempt to participate.
Yeah, if there's a public hearing, I hadn't heard that particularly. I'll pass it on. Our council may be aware of it. I wasn't personally. But sure, obviously if there is a public hearing, we're going to be there because it was primarily focused on us. We got, there's that International Society of Explosive Engineers supported us on that, but it really wasn't a regulation aimed at them. It happened to splatter them by accident, and they were really wound up about it. Chris?
I have two important questions. One, the Senator Stalling, was Lautenberg or whatever they are, isn't there anything that we can do congressionally to get around that? I mean, is it that easy for one senator to stop the process?
Yeah. Currently, all promotions of officers above the rank of 2 stars in the United States Air Force are stalled and have been for 6 months because of one senator.
Wow.
That's just the way it goes. Welcome to Washington.
Second question.
Nothing you can do.
This is my important one. Okay, it's not ideal. Okay, but would it be possible to find, now this is a complicated process, find a fuel not currently on the ATF list that is suitable for rocketry. Before we use this fuel, get regulatory relief to prevent the ATF from then taking it away from us once we develop it?
Hybrids?
Yeah.
Like especially hybrids. Well, how do we prevent them from taking it? If their objective is to regulate rockets, not motors.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why we got to fight them, because if they beat us on solid propellant, they'll go after hybrids next.
Well, is there anything we could do regulatorily to protect hybrids before they put their sights on it? Maybe pass get a bill passed to protect hybrids before it even comes up to the ATF's radar.
We got to win this one first. There are 10,000 bills introduced every year, and maybe 100 make it into law, and that wouldn't be one of them. Mm-hmm. It's just a niche issue. It's just we can't garner enough political support to correct an injustice right now. There's no way we can make that issue important enough. I mean, of all the issues competing for the time and attention of the congressmen and senators, how would we convince them that particular one is important enough to make the cut? Not that it's not worthy, it's just that there's so many voices out
more
there
important things.
It's just, we wouldn't be able to. We wouldn't have enough money to do it. Yeah.
Just a comment and then a question. Earl, you made a comment earlier that said the AAA and the NAR are in this 100% together, and you're sharing costs and you're agreeing on every little item that you can. I realize it's a pretty tough coalition to hold together. I mean, not just from the fact that the two organizations are so different, but from the fact that there's a lot of push-pull coming at you from outside both of those organizations. And I wanted to thank you for the whole NAR membership and leadership for being both conscientious and patient with that coalition. I think it's worked wonderfully, and I think it's healed a lot of old wounds, and I think it's worthy of some comment.
Thanks. I think you should thank the AAA leadership, too. They have good leadership now. Yeah, exactly. Okay, but nevertheless, it's been a two-way street there, and Tripoli has elected some people who are just very good and who actually understand how things really get done as opposed to how you wish they would get done. And that makes it possible because, you know, the business of getting something done in Washington is fairly, it can be offensive if you're a person of moral principles and say this is just wrong. Well, you know, welcome to a democracy. It's not wrong. Just a compromise, and that's what we're going to have to do. And you have to be somewhat willing to compromise, and I think the new Tripoli leadership understands that. And none of us want to compromise. We'd like to win this 100-0, but I think they recognize that that's just not the way it happens in Washington. And I know that there are a lot of people in Tripoli and some in the NAR that wish it weren't that way. That's just the way it is. We're just not going to completely win this, and we just have to understand that and take half a loaf. And considering that the terrorist threat climate around the world these days, if it weren't for that, we might have a better chance. ETFs, all they have to do is start waving that flag, and we're on the losing end of the trade. So this is just not a good time to win one of these things decisively. Jim Feller, did you have a question? You're clapping your hand. Yeah. Just scratching. Okay. Any other questions about this subject?
Yeah, Tripp, just one real quick. I work for a law office. I've reread the decision a number of times from the district court. I don't see where it says assembled HPR motor or single use. How was the distinction made?
I haven't read it in that detail either. I'm told that the ATF had made an administrative ruling granting propellant actuated device status to something or other. And because of the precedent they set there, they couldn't not extend it to our motors. But it's a loophole. I mean, it's clearly not the intent of ATF to have extended that to motors, but they did it, I think, with Jerry Rosenfeld. And they got caught at it, and the judge said that, hey, you wrote it. You got to live by it until you change it through regulation. So it's just a matter of time, and I think they fully intend to issue an NPRM to correct that. They've said very soon. I mean, they're clearly writing one right now to close that loophole. So this flying season, we're good to go. But it won't be there by next flying season, I'm sure. Kevin?
Is there some kind of time limit that they have to officially respond or to officially act on the NPRM?
20 years, 30 years?
There's
precedent for taking 20 years.
Okay.
So they can hang this over us for a while. Well,
and can they make that law during that time? Or is it not law until the process is responded?
It's never law. It's an administrative rule. It has the effect of law. And no, they cannot simply issue. That's what they did wrong that we caught them on in the courts, is issue, make rules effective without going through an NPRM process. You can't do that in the federal government. So there are no, those regulations are not in effect until this NPRM is followed up by the issuance of a final decision. But their interpretation is, hey, the current law says APCP is on the explosives list. We can do this. You know, all we were doing was saying you could have 62.5 grams of it. If you don't like that, then how about none? And so they could interpret the law, although they privately said they don't intend to go below 62.5. Their view is they could go down to 0.01 grams right now because it's on the explosives list.
Then they have to ban black powder motors, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they have to do. Yeah.
Is there some way that we can challenge them as to whether APCP is actually the law?
We did. That was the heart of our lawsuit, and we lost that one.
I mean, they said that the court didn't have a technical ability. Is there somebody in the government that does? Because, you know, we're not using HMX.
Actually, the report that I wrote for the NAR quoted a number of military sources that I... And I got a technical opinion from the Combustion Propulsion Information Agency, which is an arm of the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab. It's the national resource for expertise in solid propulsion. I got a two-page letter from them stating the stuff that the kind of material that we use is not an explosive. It cannot be made to explode. And that was part of our NPRM. And it was also part of what we're using in the Congress. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. APCP is on the explosives list. And whether it blows up or not, the fact that it's on the explosives list gives them the power to regulate it. The question is, why 30 years ago did it get on the list? Well, 30 years ago, APCP was fabricated in ways that it could be explosive. There are versions of APCP that are. It's just the particular rules that are in effect right now for what hobby rocket motors can contain, which is class 1.3 ammonium perchlorate composite propellant. It isn't explosive. There are other versions that are. And maybe that's what they had in mind 30 years ago, those other versions that are. Okay, Chris, you're going to wear my vocal cords out.
Well, I'm just unclear on something. Did the court say, no, you lose, or did the court say, we can't handle this and push it off?
Well, pushing it off defers to the government. So it was not a decision that we were wrong. It's just a decision that they couldn't sort it out.
So there's no process beyond that?
Well, yeah, we can appeal. And we will if we have to. But the first thing we want to try to do is either A, win on the legislative front, or B, make a deal. Because if we appeal then and win, then they just issue another NPRM and trump that. And so all we get by the tremendous expense of appealing the court decision on administrative rules is giving the ATF the opportunity to issue proper airtight administrative rules.
I mean the presence of our APCP on the list.
It's on the list. There isn't any doubt about it.
But we were challenging that.
We tried to challenge that it was not an explosive and shouldn't have been put on the list, but it was put on there over 30 years ago, and that was so long ago that the court didn't want to go back and reverse history.
It's a statute of limitations.
Nobody
challenged it within 7 years, and therefore and that was...
We are where we are. We're going to have to make a deal, and that's the only way out of this, and the deal is going to have to admit that, you know, okay, you can regulate this for whatever reason. It's on the explosives list, whatever. You feel like it. We give up. You can regulate it. Just give us this much, and that's where we're going to end up going. Yep, Kevin.
Well, actually, on the same note as clarification, I did read through the complete decision and track down a lot of the cross-links to it, and what came down was the argument that APCP is not an explosive. Well, it isn't, but in numerous well-regarded explosives texts, they said it does deflagrate, and those same texts and several others, including essentially the Explosives Bible, I don't remember the exact name, it was one of the encyclopedias of explosives, it listed deflagration as a type of explosion. And that was the basis of the decision. So it wasn't one of these, it wasn't just an arbitrary, oh, well, you had your chance 23 years ago. It was that the judge did get some very smart people, and they dug very, very deeply into the issue. And while we sort of had what we thought was a preponderance of evidence from testing and experts who had tested it and said, no, it doesn't explode, they pointed to encyclopedias and texts that are still in use today by the explosives industry that said it deflagrates, and deflagration is a type of explosive.
Okay, let's leave the technical issue at this point. Anybody who wants to talk about the technical issue can see me afterwards. I'll tell you whatever level of detail you want to go on that. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry.
As far as those, what's considered a propellant actuated device, that's mainly just single use motors, or that also includes like those Cicerone ones?
It's any. This isn't going to last, guys. Don't dream. It's an assembled rocket motor. An assembled high power rocket motor of any size, once you assemble it, is a propellant actuated device. A single-use motor is purchased assembled, so it's a propellant-actuated device for a few months. High-power reloadable is, once you get the reload kit and put it in the casing and put it together, it's technically a propellant-actuated device. So that is not going to last.
It's not going to last. Potentially, if someone with an LUP buys the reload kit and assembles it, then since it's fully assembled, they can pass on to someone else who does not have an LUP.
Right.
How do they process that in their paperwork then?
Assembled, recategorized from category 1.3 explosive propellant actuated device, dropped from records.
Yep.
And you're under arrest.
They do something like that kind of accounting for the explosive devices in airbags.
Yeah.
They are not they're explosive until they're assembled into an airbag unit that goes in your car.
Yeah, and the gas generators and recovery parachutes for small airplanes and so forth have APCP in them, but they're sold assembled. So they're propellant-actuated devices that are gas generators. They got the same APCP just about in them.
They have rocket extracted. Hmm? They have rocket extracted.
Okay. What else? Okay. So I'm going to bring to an end the town hall meeting. And the next step, I promise to make the association meeting short, but my experience is that if we take a break, people vaporize. I've got to have 25 senior members here for the association meeting, subject to motions from the floor or nominations from the floor, which we usually don't have, but certainly it's feasible to do that. The meeting is simply about having the election. It should not take very long. And I would propose that we proceed on with the association meeting, and at the end of it, you can have your break. Well, that wasn't a motion. That's what we're going to do, guys. When I convene the association meeting, from that point on, we're under Robert's Rules of Order, and we have to proceed with motions. So this ends the town hall meeting. I will now call to order the meeting of the National Association of Rocketry at NARAM 46. I'd like to recognize the Secretary of the NAR, George Rocker, to initiate the first order of business.
My observation is that we have 25 members present, and then the number required to qualify as a quorum. So the first thing I'm going to do is solicit nominations from the floor for the trustee election we're about to maintain. Jennifer?
I move that we close the
election. Who did the second?
Steve.
Okay.
Who's the nominee?
What's that?
Who is the nominee?
Move it. Motion to close.
The current nominees are Jay App, Ted Cochran, and George Rocker. So those of you that came in late, we were issuing ballots before you got here. Please see Jennifer if you haven't voted. And at this point, we will accept. I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we've got moved and seconded to close nominations. I will take, raise your hand. You can vote affirmatively. And a show of hands for negative. Jack, thanks. Motion carries. Nominations are closed. You may now turn in your ballot. Those of you do not have ballots and did not vote by mail, please see Jennifer, and we'll accept those ballots now.
So if you already have a ballot, mark it and bring it forward. If you do not have a ballot but have not voted by mail, come forward and register to get a ballot.
I can't grab you. You have to
please hang around for a few minutes. It will not take long to count.
Dan, check checkbook and walk that in for 5 minutes.
Don't cross the state line.
We'll vote later. Everybody's going to vote yes.
Chris, if you want attention in Washington, you need to have something about gay people doing high power rockets, gay couples. Then you'll get attention.
You might get more attention than you really want.
See, gay minority.
Yeah. Then you'll get the attention of it. Then it'll become a hot topic.
Gay minority veteran couples.
And it helps if they're also millionaires.
As a matter of fact, you might be in the constitutional amendment part of that.
Steve, I take a second break to make sure your name didn't get back as well.
It went that way.
It's the same.
Okay, are there any further people out there who desire a ballot or who have a ballot and desire to turn it in? Okay, I'll ask our vote counters to count, and I will well, I'm not going to suspend the meeting. I can't adjourn the meeting. That's administratively too hard. Do I have any questions from the floor?
Did you read the minutes?
I have a motion from the floor.
I'll entertain a motion from the floor.
In light of the weather we've experienced so far this week and the pattern of the last several years, I move we change the name of this association to the National Association for Drought Abatement.
Second is heard.
If you choose to rule me out of order,
I think it died.
I think the motion, do I hear a second for that motion? Okay, it died for lack of a second.
Very well.
Thank you for providing the entertainment.
I move to change the name to National Association of Rainmaking.
Okay. I'm going to rule that more of these motions are going to be out of order here.
I did warn you. I'm just going to
Okay. There's a great deal of suspense involved in this election.
Oh, yeah.
Will it be
100%
or no?
Some of us have short attention spans. So, yeah.
I didn't notice a short attention span when we were talking about laws and regulations. I appreciate the discussion here. This is endlessly frustrating to all of us in leadership. There's very good natured about it.
Last. Chip, along a Team America question, since we're doing a duration event, are you going to need more volunteers this year than in the past?
Yeah, we'll need timing teams. I'm going to reshuffle a little bit. I'll probably need another 6 or 8 range crew compared to last year in order to have timing teams.
Would the teams time themselves? Or would
well, when the rules come out, they'll make that clear. But every locally conducted flight has to have a NAR senior member observer, and that observer will be one of the two timers. The other timer can be any adult who's not related to a member of the team or the school.
How about at the finals?
At the finals, we'll have 2 NAR members. No, the teams will not time themselves. It'll be just like NARA. There'll be a pool of timers who will all be NAR members, who will be the expert timers.
Cool.
And I'll probably have 4 or 5 timing teams. These are not going to be up very long. So,
In terms of timing, I'm sure you're going to work this through, but I think in terms of how we time the contest, there's all the disappears into the sky and rain times and when does it disappear and what does it touch the ground?
Right. Yeah, I'm basically repeating the text of the applicable Pink Book rules and the Team America rules in terms of how you handle timing. When you lose sight, stop, etc. So, and we'll be,
Do you have dates for the fly-off?
The 21st of May. We're squeezed in between 2 horse events. Horse events pay the freight at Great Meadow, ladies and gentlemen. So they are important. And it turns out that one horse event has the place until the weekend before the weekend of the 21st, and another one has it the weekend of the 28th, so there's really only one weekend that we can have it. And it's the 21st of May, 2005.
AIAA okay with that, dude?
Yeah, they're not going to change it on me. Last year, there were 2 possible weekends it could have been. There were 5. This is the long story. There were 5 weekends in May. The first 3 were clobbered with the horse event, so there were 2 weekends it could have been. We made a choice early, and AIA changed their mind later. But this year, because there are only 4 weekends in May, there's only 1 weekend we can have it, so they can't change their minds.
Okay.
So, Mr. Secretary, do we have the results of the election?
So we're going to get rid of all the suspense here. The results of the election, JF, you're going to see 80 votes. Ted Cochran received 81, and George Rockman received 79. Congratulations to all. They're elected.
Thank you.
I have one more piece of business, and this is semi-personal. Every year, I get my wife to come to NARA, and every year, she has a birthday here. So today is her birthday. There are several people that come to NARA every year that have birthdays. Mark Beaver, Vince Giovanni, George Pike, Tony Vincent, Jennifer Ashpool, Tracy Wolfenberg, Garrett Miller, Wisconsin. We have cakes over here. There's probably enough for all of you, so at the end of this evening, you're welcome to grab a piece. And it's time to sing happy birthday to those folks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Getting this crisp, right?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear God. Happy birthday to you.
We're serving cake and singing in association.
And with him not here.
With him not here, the cat's away, the mice will play. Don't anybody tell him. Yeah, send him some cake. Yeah, that'll appreciate that, too.
Will you entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Is there any further business that should come before this association at this association meeting?
I move we adjourn.
I hear a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Aye, sir.
All those in favor, raise your hand. Any opposed by the same sign?
Anybody agreed to that?
Anybody who has individual questions, I'll be around for a while. Come have some cake. Thanks for coming. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you.
Candles.
Oh,
is
yes, I did.
You block it, I'll call it.
All right, now you can work.